welcome to Mission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that wonderful moment when you can jump up and down and say, yes, I'm in. Now, I am especially excited for today's show on a couple of levels. Number one, this is our 100th episode. Well, I started the podcast with trepidation and, frankly, with a certain lack of consistency. About a year and a half ago, I got serious and turned this podcast into a consistently weekly show. I've thoroughly enjoyed interviewing leaders in the admissions world, interviewing impressive graduate students and graduates who are making a difference to our society with entrepreneurial drive and whatever it is that they're doing and achieving at this point. I've loved interviewing providers of ancillary services for graduate school applicants of all stripes, and just have found really that the podcast is one of the things I truly enjoy about my work. And in general, I'm pretty enthusiastic about what I do. The second reason I'm really excited for today's show is our guest. Now, all Admission Straight Talk guests are special, but today, in honor of the 100th show, I wanted a super special guest. And yes, and as you will hear in a minute, I think the guest today lives up to the billing and then some. Now, before introducing today's guest, I would like to remind you that I'm happy to answer your questions on the show. If you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/100100 and post your question as a comment. I feel like saying that number again, but I'll control myself. I'll ask and answer your question on the show. I am pleased to say that we have developed a supportive, collaborative, and thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to post a question, share a concern, or just share a comment. Now, to today's guest on the 100th episode of Admissions Straight Talk. John Medved has been described as a force of nature and as someone who, according to Dan Senor and Saul Singer in Startup Nation, is in perpetual motion. My husband and I know John and his wife as former neighbors and fellow synagogue members whose son played with our son when they were both in preschool. Now, I remember sharing several delightful meals with them when they lived nearby. At the time, he worked in his father's business. However, in 1991, John and his family moved to Israel, and I more or less heard about John in the news from mutual acquaintances and in books like Startup Nation, where he appears prominently. Today, he is co-founder and CEO of Our Crowd, one of the largest equity-based crowdfunding platforms in the world, or perhaps the largest. I know we'll hear about that. Its goal is to provide venture capital funding for Israeli and later global venture capital startups. Previously, he grew Israel Seed Partners, the venture capital fund he started in the late 1980s, to over $260 million and invested in some 60-plus Israeli startups, including several that went public on the NASDAQ. In 2006, John launched and grew Veringo, a company that sold video ringtones for cell phones. He has tremendous insight into the world of entrepreneurship and venture capital. It gives me enormous pleasure to welcome John Medved to Admission Straight Talk. John, welcome.
Great to be with you, Linda. Thank you.
All right. John, can you give us a little more background into the founding and growth of Our Crowd?
So Our Crowd today is indeed the world's largest equity crowdfunding platform. We started as a result of my desire to hook up individual investors with the very cool startup scene in Israel. As mentioned, there's this book called Startup Nation where I appear as a character, and they talk about my rather peripatetic and ongoing perpetual motion where I'm talking about Israel. And at the end of most of these talks, people would approach me with a business card and say, find me a deal. And these cards would then get into the card scanning software, and then they would end up in a shoebox. And these shoeboxes began to literally stack up, and I said, wait a minute, there's got to be something I can do for the shoebox problem. And I sort of combined that with the emerging area of crowdfunding and thought, what a perfect way to help the potentially millions of people who have read about Israel's tech scene figure out how to, you know, hook up with Israeli companies, either as investors or as business partners or potentially employees. And, you know, we launched Our Crowd, and it turns out that I was right. And today we're already 7,000 accredited investors on the platform. We've invested over $110 million in 61 companies. And we're growing very, very fast because there's a huge need to provide new sources of capital for innovative companies. People like to do it over the web. People like to do it outside of their local, you know, vicinity. It used to be said in Silicon Valley that I wouldn't, you know, one of the famous VCs said, I won't invest in anything I can't ride my bike to. But the world is a, you know, a broad place where, you know, there's now innovation coming out of Asia and out of Africa and out of Latin America, and they don't happen to be blessed with the, you know, a plethora of venture funds like Silicon Valley. But now with our crowd and with platforms like ours, you can democratize this whole process and let individual investors get into cool startups in Israel or elsewhere.
Now, when you talk about democratizing the process or crowdfunding, I think most people would think of something like Kickstarter, where you invest $25 or $100. Our crowd may have democratized the process somewhat, but it's not quite that democratic.
Right. We've been described by Israeli TV as Kickstarter for millionaires. The regulatory requirements today force us to take money in the U.S. only from accredited investors. And by the way, in most countries that follow sort of Western forms of law in the EU, Canada, Israel. And so therefore, we force people to actually accredit with us to certify that they have, you know, this net worth. In the U.S., it's $1 million of net worth outside of your home or a $200,000 income. Once you have that, then you're good to go. Okay, and we take a third-party attestation after you've told us to make sure that you're telling us the truth. We do what's called KYC, know your client, know your customer. Uh-huh. And then we essentially are busy curating and hunting down what we think are really interesting and propitious opportunities, you know, to potentially invest in. Once we find them, we negotiate the terms. We invest our own money, usually about 5% of the overall investment, and then we open it to the crowd of our accredited investors. And they can come in for amounts starting at $10,000. So this is not Kickstarter where you put $50 in and get a T-shirt.
Right. Right.
You do end up getting equity, you know, in a partnership which owns shares of a, you know, startup company, but you're able to actually pick your own company and make these investments. And from $10,000, we've had checks that are larger than $1 million as well.
And I assume our crowd, the company, your company, is also vetting these investments because you're also investing in them, correct?
Absolutely. We're taking about 2% of the deals that we've seen. We've actually vetted thousands of deals so far and made 61 investments.
Wow. Now, this is a podcast devoted to graduate admissions with the premise that you can't really choose to go to graduate school unless you have some kind of professional goal on the other end. And you've done a ton of investing and hiring in your career. And you regularly hire young professionals and invest in young companies. What do you look for in the CEOs of the companies that you invest in? Or does the character of the CEO matter to you when you're vetting an investment?
Oh, my. You know, people ask about the real estate business. What's the most important, you know, criteria? And they
location.
Say location, location, location.
Right.
In my business, in the startup investment business, it's team, team, team. And the team is led by the CEO, by the founder often. And so does it matter? It's almost the only thing that matters.
Really?
The quality of the idea is secondary. The competitive landscape is secondary. Even traction, which is important, you know, how much progress the company is making is secondary. It's all about the people. And we look for people who, on the one hand, are experienced and have deep knowledge of the area that they're addressing, but that also have that often ineffable spark where they are good communicators, they've been trained at great universities, and they, you know, just make you want to invest with them. Because you're basically getting into bed, sorry for the analogy, but with somebody which is going to be a long-term relationship. This is not a one-night stand. Okay, this is, you know, it's not necessarily a lifetime marriage either, okay, because, you know, hopefully these companies will, you know, grow to fruition and get exited either through an IPO.
It is a partnership.
But it's a partnership. And the character and the quality of the leadership is almost everything.
Now, you touched on this a second ago when you said that you look at for people who come from great schools. You were a history major, undergrad at Berkeley. You went into a highly technical field, fiber optics, when you joined your dad's business. You don't have a graduate degree or formal training in business, in physics, in computers, in any of the fields that you have invested so heavily in and succeeded so well at. How did you do it?
Luck.
Okay. Okay.
I'm an autodidact, and okay. You know, to the extent I'm not an autodidact, I learned from my father. I had a very, very good teacher.
Outstanding
teacher. Business,
I remember your father.
Yeah, was with my late father, Dr. David Medved, who did have a PhD in physics. And he was a great businessman and a great person. He was a mensch.
Oh, absolutely. It was wonderful.
I learned a lot of things from my father about balance. About, you know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd be busy working on a proposal, and he would come into me and say, "Son, it's time to go to the beach." And I would say, "What? The beach? No, we've got to get this proposal out." He goes, "No, son, you got to get to the beach. It's a sunny day. You got to get into those waves." And he would like drag me and go himself, you know, body surfing for half an hour, and then come back. And instead of feeling sort of, you know, angry that he took me away from this, I felt relieved and refreshed and happy. My father was a Sabbath observer who stopped, you know, all work for 24 hours, during Friday night through Saturday night. And I learned a lot of good things from him. But in terms of the professional stuff that I picked up, I have a lot of respect for graduate training. I think that business school is a great thing to go to. I've seen, you know, tremendous careers built by people who, you know, gone to business school. I've also seen people who go to business school who miss the point, who think that it's all by the book or it's all by the case study. And what business school does, yeah, it gives you a chance to be with other great people, to think about these issues, to learn about best practices. And, you know, I, like many people, am impressed and influenced by a candidate who comes, you know, from with a Harvard or Stanford MBA or, you know, a Technion, you know, a PhD or a MIT master's. You know, these matter to me. But it's still more about the person because, you know, let's face it, there are plenty of people out there today who, you know, have made great careers without the formal education.
I'm looking at one.
Oh, that's I've got the education in history, Mark Zuckerberg and sure. You know, the late Steve Bill Jobs Gates. And Bill Gates. Okay, you know, Larry Ellison. I think there's Michael Dell. I'm not sure about Larry actually. I've got to go back and check that. I think that there, you know, arguments to be made on both sides. I think that education is an incredibly useful tool, and getting the finishing and the training and the rigor, okay, and discipline you get from a top-notch grad school is only a good thing. But it's not everything, right? In other words, you still need that job expertise, you need the passion, you need the courage, you need the risk-taking. And when you have it all, then you're, I think, a much stronger person.
Are those the qualities you think that young adults should cultivate in themselves, or what qualities do you think young adults should cultivate them in themselves, even if they are pursuing these prestigious degrees and getting this rigorous education? Like you say, it's not everything. What should, in terms of taking responsibility for themselves and for their future, what should they be cultivating in themselves? What have you cultivated in your kids since I last saw them when they were 4 and 5 years old?
Doing well, thank God.
Right.
Look, a part of it is in Israel, our kids all do army service.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at, you know, and what the Army does, and I've got two sons who are officers in the IDF, mm-hmm. You know, they spend 5 years apiece. It first of all inculcates a sense of service, okay? Because I think that when you're looking at a career in business, it's not just about making money. There's a certain part of you actually having a service to humanity, to your country, to your city, to your workers. I know that many people in the popular culture view business as an evil thing, right? In other words, the businessman shows up on the Hollywood film and you want to hear the soundtrack, dum-da-dum-dum, like he's some kind of evil character. I don't buy it.
Right.
I think that business people are partners with God, okay? I think that, you know, creating activity and creating jobs.
Creating value.
Nothing more holy. Well, you know, there's this, as you know, one of the great thinkers in Jewish life was a man named Maimonides, who wrote in the 11th century. Mm-hmm. And he wrote Laws of Charity. And he said that if you give money to a poor person directly, that's great and very admirable. If you give money to that same poor person anonymously, that's better. It's a higher form of charity.
Great.
But what is the highest form of charity?
Giving him a job.
Give him a job. Create a job. And therefore, people who are entrepreneurs, who are building businesses and creating jobs, they're doing great services. So I think having a sense of service and a sense of mission is very important. I think that being able to lead, and that leadership can be expressed in civic groups, scouting groups, sporting groups, military activity. Okay, certainly in the IDF, you know, my sons learn to lead, and kids' lives depend on it.
Right.
Okay, so that's pretty good. In America, too, you know, leaders
come from the military, absolutely.
You know? So I think it's service, it's leadership, it's discipline. Okay, it's knowing about deferred gratification. You know, you want to go home at 7 or 8 o'clock and have that balance, but sometimes you do have to stick it out and get it done.
And sometimes do a body surfing.
Yeah, sometimes you go, it's okay to take a half an hour, go body surfing, and get back there and finish the job. But the ultimately, it's about risk-taking. And in our business, it's really about stepping out of your comfort zone, both from a thought process perspective, as well as sometimes it means quitting your job, you know, putting your family at a little bit of near-term financial jeopardy, taking your own money and investing it in a business. And that's a real head, okay, which is really critical, I think, for anybody who's considering a career in entrepreneurship or in startups, has to get their head around, which is that, am I really a risk taker? Because some people aren't. Most people aren't. Most people, you know, give me job security, give me a steady paycheck, okay, and I'm happy. And that's fine. That's a great life. But if you're going to go create, you know, exciting, wonderful startup companies, you've got to be able to, you know, handle that kind of risk.
Right. The Graduate Management Admissions Council, which is kind of the MBA trade organization, also created and administers the GMAT test, which most MBA students take, and recently identified three traits as being critical to both entrepreneurial success and success in business, even in the corporate world. And they were innovativeness, risk-taking behavior, and an initiative or proactiveness. And those are pretty much what you're talking about also.
Yep.
I would add, specifically in terms of people who have served in the military or people who have assumed leadership roles on campus to a lesser extent, they are assuming responsibility for something. They're assuming responsibility for an outcome, sometimes for people's lives, especially in the military. And I think that taking of responsibility enormously matures people and prepares them to assume greater responsibility in the future.
Right. It's really about learning to lead people, okay? And the most important first thing you do when you start a company is you convince other people to join you, often without any money in the beginning.
That's right.
Where they buy into your vision and they say, you know what, together we're going to go make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And that skill of how do I persuade people to follow me? How do I become a Pied Piper? How do I help meet their needs, whether it's in a Maslow or other, you know, sense? That's a critical talent. And that talent can be gotten in the military for sure. It can also be gotten in student government.
Oh, yeah.
Be gotten in your church group or your synagogue group.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people who know how to lead other people can, I think, translate that into a business career if they have the rigor and the discipline They understand that numbers count. Okay, and today there are all kinds of tools on the computer let you, you know, even overcome people who are mathematically challenged. Okay, and but then it's there's another element. I would, you know, innovation or initiative are important, but I think there's a natural curiosity. Okay, in other words, you have to be a person who sort of looks at the world and sees what is not yet and can be.
Right.
And that typically comes with somebody, you know, if you ask somebody in an interview, you know, read, tell me the 5 books you most recently read or magazines that you read, they have nothing to say about that, or they can't talk about websites, or they can't talk about, you know, big trends in the wider world, whether it's politics or technology. I'm not sure those are going to make the best leaders. That's my own personal preference.
Okay. When do you think graduate education is necessary to run and grow a business, to analyze deals for that matter?
Look, I think that to the extent that you have a graduate education in business, it really helps in terms of doing market analysis, taking a look at, you know, what, you know, looking at an investment plan or creating one and understanding, you know, what's real or not. A lot of it's common sense, okay? I mean, in other words, but there are certain, you know, today what's interesting is that we're all using technology. And, you know, you say, well, is this guy a social media expert? For crying out loud, go find a teenager. Okay. I mean, they're the ones who understand this stuff better than anybody.
It's true.
I mean, I'm always playing catch up with the kids, okay, and it keeps me young and I enjoy it. But I think that when you have that combination of being with it, getting it, being current with the technology, but you then have the tools and the disciplines that have come to you from a professional training at a graduate school, that's the killer combination.
Okay. All right. Can you tell us a little bit, speaking of graduate education, can you tell us a little bit about the partnership between Wharton's Social Impact Initiative and Our Crowd, your company?
So we're delighted. Look, Wharton has a social investment fund activity where they're taking their best students and letting them find companies that are not just going to, you know, create great profits, but also, you know, promote the planet and promote people. And they're out there looking and scanning the world to find these companies. And we figured that, you know, we should utilize this talent and put these companies up on Our Crowd. So we are now working with the Wharton Social Impact people and their students to identify companies which, once they've gone through this rigorous selection process at Wharton, will be ready for crowdfunding on Our Crowd. And we just announced this partnership about a week ago.
Yeah, I saw it.
And getting great response. And we hope that it's the first of many partnerships with universities. And we're very, you know, committed to social impact investing, finding companies that have the triple bottom line, which are, you know, profits, people, and the planet.
Sounds good. Yeah, I was thinking, are you going to try and do it with other schools also? Because certainly there are many.
Well, let's get it to work with Wharton first.
Okay.
And then we'll ask.
All right. Fair enough. What concerns you about the high-tech young enterprise world now? You know, the Nasdaq was recently at 5,000 again. Do you think there's a bubble?
I don't think there's a bubble, because mm-hmm. I think that this time around, the companies that are driving this are not selling, you know, pet food or, you know, it's serious business today.
Yeah.
If you look at Google's a real business, very real business. So is Facebook. So is Twitter.
They're enormous.
Okay. These are real businesses with real revenues and profits. Okay. And some of the new up and coming companies, the Ubers and whatnot. You might argue with their valuation. Okay. But these are, you know, game changing, life changing companies.
Yeah.
And so I think that we're the beneficiary this time around for a lot of things that are in place that are going to allow this tech change and transformation to be far more impactful than it was in the past. We now have almost everybody online, certainly in the industrial, you know, developed world.
True.
Everybody's mobile, okay, which is very important. So it's ubiquity. So we're, you know, not just online, but we're, you know, always on, okay? We're connected.
It's in our pocket.
We're now moving into the Internet of Things, where not only us and our mobile phones and our computers can be online, but everything around us, from our light bulbs to our refrigerators to our air conditioners, are all going to be here. We're spewing off enormous amounts of data, which is a little scary, okay, but is also very, very productive and should improve all of our lives and improve commerce, okay? There are great needs, you know, and benefits to be gotten through the sharing economy, where we can use the wisdom of crowds, whether it's for crowdfunding and investment or for, a million other things in terms of, you know, crowdfunding innovation and crowd, you know, sourcing strategy, and you name it. And so all these things in place, in my opinion, mean that you really haven't seen anything. Now, how this translates to stock prices, I'm not a stock prophet, okay? I do pick, you know, startup companies, and I'm pretty well, I hope.
Obviously very well. Yeah,
but the long-term change, the long-term trend is going to be up and to the right. There's going to be tremendous growth in technology, and there are going to be Google and Facebook-size companies that are going to come on the scene that you haven't even heard their name yet, lots of them, because they are being formed by some, you know, student or by some, you know, high school student or God knows what, or some grad student in their dorm room, and they're going to be bursting on the scene any minute, and that whole pace is going to accelerate.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, you both run your own enterprise, you've founded your own enterprises, and you've invested heavily in other enterprises. Which do you prefer?
I like starting stuff.
You like starting stuff.
And what's fun about our crowd is that I'm both running a startup enterprise and changing the way that investing is being done worldwide.
Yeah.
But I'm also an investor. So I'm a startup guy and an investor, and it's all good.
And you have this
parade
of fascinating companies coming before you, and amazing.
To sit around, and I obviously don't sit very much.
But no, you don't sit much.
To hear people share their dreams with you as your job, and then have the ability to help make them come true.
On some level, I do that too, and you're right. It's fascinating. It's wonderful. It's the best part of it.
It's a great blessing. It's a great blessing.
Yeah. I mean, you do it on a bigger scale, but it is when people email you and say, you've helped me make my dream come true.
Well, you're helping thousands of people, you know, over time get into
you're helping millions of people any last words of advice for the aspiring entrepreneur? Either in a graduate school, in college, or in between?
No time is better than now. Don't say, well, I'm going to try to, you know, do this thing in later. Don't be too, you know, purposeful. And I find that entrepreneurs aren't the kind of guys who say, well, I'll start my startup in 3 or 4 years from now when the conditions are right. If you've got a good idea and you've got that tolerance for risk and you think you can, you know, the way to test that out is to try to persuade some people to join you with the adventure. And if no one's coming, then give it up, okay? Because if, you know, don't do it on your own. But if you're able to persuade a cool group of people to join you, then go for it.
Or to buy your service or product.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It could
turn out to be very lucrative and a heck of a lot of fun.
For sure. John, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners learn more about Our Crowd?
At www.ourcrowd.com. Be happy to send you a link, you know, to your website or some screenshots. And we look forward to working with all the wonderful people you're helping at accepted.com.
Thank you. We'll include a link in the show notes at info.accepted.com/100 to Our Crowd, to a couple of the interviews with you, John, that I saw on your site, and also to the book Startup Nation, because I think it's an excellent book not just because you're in it, but because I think it really brings out a lot of the qualities that entrepreneurs should be nurturing in themselves. Listener, thank you, too, for tuning in to this, our 100th episode. If you found this episode helpful, I have a favor to ask. Please share your perspective on iTunes. There's a link to our iTunes page where you can leave a review. And if you have a question you would like or just want to comment on the show, please do so in a comment at info.accepted.com/100 or by sending an email to questions@accepted. Finally, if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.